I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome to my show. Suffering is inevitable when conflicts force people from their homes. On today's underreported feature, we're going to look into the specific issues that women and girls face during times of war, including gender-based violence and seriously inadequate reproductive health care. Gertrude Garway, Program Manager for the International Rescue Committee's Gender-Based Violence, GBV, program in Liberia, joins me now. She recently received a Voices of Courage Award for her work by the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children. Welcome, Gertrude.
Thank you.
And also here is Sandra Krauss, Director of Reproductive Health, the Reproductive Health Program at the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children. Hello.
Hello.
Gertrude, I understand that you have a background in nursing. When did you start practicing?
I graduated from the nursing school in 1988, and I work as a nurse from 1989 to up to 1997.
When you were forced to leave, but we'll get into that. When you became a nurse, were women's issues something that you knew you wanted to focus on?
Yes, I became a nurse, and I always wanted to go back to school and even do more as a nurse midwife, to be able to go through schooling to be a nurse midwife. But because of the war, moving from one place to another, I was not fortunate to go back to school. But then I was fortunate to go into the gender-based violence program, where I work with women and children.
Where were you when you started nursing? What part of Liberia were you in?
I started working as a nurse in Nimba County, in a place called Tapeta, close to the Afuren border.
And how did that compare? That was in the interior then.
How
would the situation have compared with Monrovia at the time?
The situation working in Tapeta compared to Monrovia. In Monrovia, there are a lot of people in Monrovia because Monrovia is the city. There are a lot of people in Monrovia who are there and willing to work. But in the interior, most nurses don't want to work in the interior because in the interior for our country, there are not better schools for your children. There are not good facilities at that time when we even had water and electricity in Monrovia. There was no water and electricity. And so women in the interior, they have few people to help them, have few people to give them education and to give them assistance in healthcare assistance.
And was there already fighting in the country at that time?
Well, when I started in 1989, no, but the war started December 1989, and where I live in Tapeta was affected in March of 1990, and I had to leave.
And you went to Monrovia?
Yes, I had to leave, walking from one place to another, and finally I got to Monrovia.
What was happening in Monrovia at that time? Was the fighting there as well?
In Monrovia at that time, actually there was not fighting, but there was people coming from the interior, from the areas that were being affected by the war. And we were there. I found a job there with MSF, a volunteer job, where I was working with MSF, assisting people who were coming from the war-affected areas, people who were sick, wounded. And I was working there at the government hospital, or JFK hospital, where we were assisting our brothers and sisters who were affected by war at that time.
The Doctors Without Borders.
Yes.
And you were not just working with women, you were working with all the victims of the
war.
Yes,
at that time.
What kinds of cases did you see?
At that time, we saw people with bullet wounds. We saw people, malnourished children, because people had to walk from one place to another in the bushes and they couldn't find food to eat. We saw a lot of malnourished children. We saw people with bullet wounds. We saw people with other sicknesses like malaria, which is malaria affects a lot of people in that region.
Also, people who stepped on mines, I assume. People have lost limbs because of that.
At that time, it had not reached that degree.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Were the hospitals in Liberia adequately prepared to handle a crisis of that magnitude?
Well, Medicine Sans Frontières started assisting, but actually for hospitals to be adequately prepared, I didn't see it like that, but Medicine Sans Frontières was helping to make sure that assistance was being given to people who were affected at that time.
Sandra, is this the typical story? Is this the same sort of thing we might hear about in conflicts in other parts of Africa, like Sierra Leone or Guinea, or in places like Southeast Asia, the Middle East, South and Central America, where there's also been conflict?
Yes, but you would also see problems with women who are pregnant and who have suffered from complications of that pregnancy, women who have survived sexual violence of some kind. Very often...
In all those places?
Yes, yes. And very often the health infrastructure has been completely destroyed, and there are very few health care staff like Gertrude available to provide care.
Do women, their problems tend to get pushed to the back burner in times of conflict because you have people who are wounded, as you said, people who are suffering from other major problems? So a woman who is pregnant, is she going to get the kind of treatment she might have gotten in peacetime?
Well, no. There were a lot of women during the war at that time. There were a lot of women, pregnant women, breastfeeding mothers. And there were a lot of women in that. In the cities where people were displaced, there were already people with those problems. So more people coming in, being displaced, overstressed most of the health facilities that were there. So actually, it was that possible for them to get the care that they should have gotten in normal situation.
Do women in Liberia have equal rights with men?
No. Women in Liberia are looked at as the subordinate ones. Women in Liberia are believed to be subordinate to men. They have to listen to men everywhere, in a home, in offices, in the communities. Women are not recognized to have equal rights compared to men.
Sandra, are women likely to suffer more in areas where they have fewer rights? Is there a direct correlation, do you think?
Well, certainly the issue of gender-based violence and it's perpetrated actually, or it's caused by power imbalances between the differences between men and women very often. So yes, in that area particularly, gender-based violence.
My guests are Sandra Krauss, Director of Reproductive Health Program at the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children, and Gertrude Garway, Program Manager for the International Rescue Committee's Gender-Based Violence Program in Liberia. This is underreported on the Leonard Lopate Show. So what are considered the main priorities in times of war? Does the type and stage of conflict make a difference? For instance, do women in stable refugee camps face a different set of concerns than internally displaced women, as in the situations we see even now in Uganda and Sudan?
They do face the same needs, whether they're internally displaced or they're refugee women, but their chances of getting appropriate care differ. Women who are in refugee camp settings, fortunately over the past 10 years there's been more attention to this neglected area of care for women in these settings. So women in stable refugee camp settings tend to get adequate or somewhat adequate care to the local surrounding populations. However, women who are in a new emergency setting, such as in the recent tsunami crisis or in the Darfur crisis, and women who are in internally displaced populations, so not in camps, do not get adequate care. In fact, it's very insufficient.
There's often talk about the difficulties of distributing aid in areas where there's conflict, or in the case of the tsunami, where the roads have been washed away and it's hard just to get to the places in most need.
That's true, but where it is, or when it is delivered and there is access, it's very important that women are a part of ensuring that that care gets to them. So they have to be participating in the distribution process,
Gertrude,
from the planning to the implementation.
You were then forced to leave Monrovia as well, weren't you, when the fighting got intense there?
Yes, I was forced to leave Monrovia, and I moved from one place to another. But then finally, I had to cross over to Guinea. In 1993, I had to go to Guinea, and I stayed in Guinea as a refugee up to 2000.
That was a long time then. Yeah. Living, were you able to practice your nursing?
Yes, when I got to Guinea, in February and March, I was able to get a job with MSF Belgium, Medecins Sans Frontières Belgium, and I work at the health post in one of the most populated refugee camps, serving as a screener and also as a midwife. I attended all of the births for refugee women and citizen women in that place, in that part of Guinea called Tio.
So you had an advantage over a lot of other refugee women who couldn't work, who really couldn't participate in life. What is life like for them in these refugee camps?
Oh, life for them is very difficult and disgusting, in that as a woman in refugee camp, you, especially single mothers, even if you are not single, you will have to build your own houses. Though there's, in some cases, people are giving assistance to build their houses, but you have to build your own house. Even if you build a house, after a few months, you find out that the house is leaking and you need another tarpaulin. You need food for the children, and the ration is not just enough to carry you through. And so, because of all of these problems, women are very vulnerable, and most time you find them being used in so many ways just to be able to get a daily bread and to keep themselves up.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so Gertrude is talking about women trying to get access to their survival needs, food, water, shelter, and they become vulnerable when they don't have access to that, to sexual exploitation and abuse.
Yes. Sometimes just they have to trade sexual favors to get the basic necessities of life. Mm-hmm. But they're also vulnerable in other ways because rape is something that occurs in these refugee camps fairly frequently. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Did you have to... What happened? Did women come to you and say, I've been raped?
Yeah, very few women at that time. You know, the time I was working as a nurse, very few women came to report in that the services were not available. The 7 years the camp I was working in, the services for rape survivors were not available. There was no awareness actually about rape and where can you report and things like that. But yet and still, there were times where people came, children were brought into the clinic who were raped, or there were women who came with complaints of being raped when they go out to look for wood, or they go far distances on people's farms to work, and the owners of the farms would take advantage and rape them just because they want food. And in some times they will come and report these cases to the clinic just to be able to give some health support. But later on, when I moved to Gigedu and started working with the IRC Gender Based Violence Program, it was the first of its kind in that region. And when we started creating awareness about gender-based violence, we started giving people the chance and giving them the assurance that everything that was going to be said to us was going to be kept confidentially. People started coming out, and we realized that women were abused sexually when they were crossing the borders, when they were moving from one side to another. And even while they have settled down in the camps, they were being sexually abused by people who were in power, the block leaders, the camp leaders, people who were just in power to help them get access to services. They took advantage.
We'll come back to that after we take a little break. On today's Underreported, I'm talking with Gertrude Garway, Program Manager for the International Rescue Committee's Gender-Based Violence, GBV, program in Liberia, and Sandra Krauss, Director, Reproductive Health Program at the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children. Stay with us. The idea of an American universal health care system has been debated a lot in recent years, but did you know that proposals for a national system date back to the early 1900s? Jill Quadagno traces the history of those proposals and comes to some surprising conclusions about why they have never been enacted. And then acclaimed composer, writer, and director Elizabeth Suedos explains how she fought her depression by drawing pictures and cartoons about her feelings. And Mercedes Ruehl talks about her Obie Award-winning portrayal of Peggy Guggenheim in the off-Broadway play Woman Before a Glass. All coming up here on WNYC, AM, FM, and WNYC.org, the place for news and talk all day, classical music all night, and now available as a podcast, too.
WNYC is supported by The New School, offering hundreds of courses beginning June 6th, as well as certificates, undergraduate and graduate programs. Summer course bulletin at 800-319-4321 or nsu.newschool.edu. WNYC is the media sponsor of Edge of Desire, recent art in India, now at both the Asia Society in Manhattan and the Queen's Museum. Information at asiasociety.org and queensmuseum.org.
My name is Tatiana Nachnyuk. My native country is Ukraine. I'm a refugee. I'm doing my regular ship in the food co-op in the Park Slope in Brooklyn. I like this place. I like this atmosphere, this freedom, these people, flourishing. I feel like my home. I is going to be stay here forever. Via New York Public Radio, WNYC.
We're back with Underreported on the Leonard LoPage Show. My guest is Sandra Krauss, director, reproductive health program at the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children, and Gertrude Garway, program manager for the International Rescue Committee's Gender-Based Violence Program in Liberia. So, Gertrude, you went to Guinea, and you were working there for MSF in a refugee camp.
Yes.
And then you were forced to leave Guinea. Had violence broken out there as well?
Yes. I worked with MSF there in Guinea, and I also started working with IRC, the International Rescue Committee, with the gender-based violence program before the violence broke out in Guinea, and we were forced to come back home to Liberia.
Had the situation stabilized in Liberia by then? Charles Taylor was out, wasn't he?
At that time, 2000, in the year 2000, Charles Taylor was still in Liberia, but we decided to come home because at that time, though they were fighting in Liberia, but it was in another part. It is the northern part of Liberia, northeastern part in Lofa County. And where I was living in Gegedu, when there was an attack there, and people were treated badly, especially refugees, and I was one of those who was treated badly. We were dehumanized by the people. We went on a strip naked, and there were a lot of things we experienced there. So we decided, I decided along with my family, that we go home at this time, though we were refugees. We were seeking refuge in Guinea, but at this time where we are facing the same treatment that we are liable to face in our country, it was better to go back home and face the problem there.
Because when you're a refugee, you're also a foreigner, and
yes,
foreigners get to be treated even worse when they're refugees, and you would think that they would be helped because they have such a bad situation at home, but they're more vulnerable.
Yes, that's what happened to us there.
So you have new violence there. How difficult, Sandra, is it to respond to new emergencies? If war suddenly breaks out, how quickly can the problems be addressed?
Well, the problems can be addressed right away. Sometimes there's delays in access, as there was getting into Darfur, Sudan. But once you get in, there are very clear priorities, to get started on, ensuring that people have access to food, water, and shelter, particularly women, and healthcare, including and particularly reproductive healthcare. There is a very specific set of priority activities in reproductive health that should be available.
Well, you've mentioned Darfur a couple of times. It's been reported that in Sudan, women endure beatings and rape daily. Why is that happening? Aren't there people in there to ensure some safety for those women?
Well, there are people that are there, but there's clearly not enough resources to provide the overall protection needs through the AU, from the African Union monitors. For one thing. But women are, yes, just to go out and get firewood, as Gertrude is explaining, in the situation in Liberia, they're risking rape every time, and they are continue to be raped. And there are things that can be done to prevent that, and should be done and are being done in some sites, like facilitating lorries, for example, or guards to go out with the women when they collect the firewood.
Although we've also seen in some cases that the people who work for the NGOs are vulnerable, and any number of aid agencies have pulled out of countries because their workers have been killed or some of the women have been raped.
This extremely difficult environment to work in. In addition, there should be care available. I mean, there should be care available everywhere for survivors of rape. I think the program that Gertrude's worked on with IRC is one of the cutting-edge programs, and it's wonderful that they've taken the lead in making sure those services are available, but that certainly hasn't been the case from the Women's Commission's findings in our assessment missions in the tsunami crisis and to Chad, where Darfurian refugees were, that aid agencies were not prepared to provide the critical care that women who have survived sexual violence need to prevent further trauma, such as unwanted pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections like HIV/AIDS and so forth.
Well, even if you're able, Gertrude, to secure a health clinic to put something up for those women, what are the cultural problems that you face? Many women are afraid to admit that they've been raped because it puts a stigma on them, doesn't it?
Yes, many women are really afraid to report. You find out that initially, before I started working with the gender-based violence program in Liberia, I worked with a local group they call the reproductive health group. The women will come and we repeatedly complain of reproductive health problems. And if you go deeper, if you are trained to ask them and probe more, you will be able to know that this person, you will be able to help them to report that they experienced sexual violence in the past or in recent times. But it's not easy for women to just report. But women that we have worked with for some time, the camps we have worked with in a year or two, the women are now getting to know the importance of reporting. And because the importance of reporting promptly help you to minimize the consequences of gender-based violence. There have been incidents where people have women were raped in Liberia, and they suffer from what they call vesico-vaginal fistula. They pass urine unknown to themselves, and it's very bad. Women in those type of situation, they keep themselves away from other women. They keep themselves away from all activities in a camp or in the communities that they live. And when the awareness started to go around, as we are doing now, lots and lots of women begin to come. And in recent times, we were able to, just for the month of April, we were able to help 8 women who had suffered from this violence and had the consequences of vesico-vaginal fistula. And fortunately for them, they were able to be supported through the International Rescue Committee to get their operation done. And 7 of them were successful, though 1 of them had a breakdown, and that's how it is.
I'm sure some of them are also victims of sexually transmitted diseases as a result of those rapes.
Yes.
But we're talking about cultures where, in many cases, a woman is blamed for the rape and a man gets away with it. So how is that dealt with? Don't tell me just yet, because I have to tell everyone who my guests are. Gertrude Garway, Program Manager for the International Rescue Committee's Gender-Based Violence Program in Liberia, and also Sandra Krauss, Director of Reproductive Health Program at the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Are the men who rape likely to be brought to justice? Is there any legal system in place to punish them?
Well, the system is there. The system is there. It's written down. But in most cases, women do not take the choice of taking these men to court to seek legal justice in that the community blames them and they don't have the support from even their family members. If a woman is raped, they feel that she looked for it. Maybe it was the way she dressed or she went to the men's place or why was she in an or dissected area at that time. And the stigma can be so bad that the women, they don't want to report it, they don't want to seek legal justice. And the men go free with these things. In that even if they go to law, the laws in my country they are so narrow in on the line of gender-based violence in that they will want you to bring a lot of proof and most often the women will not report on time. Even if they report on time, we don't have the facility to do a forensic examination to have those real tests and proof.
The DNA proofs.
Yes, we don't have the facilities to be able to provide those proof in Liberia.
The International Tribunal Court deals with murder as a war crime, but Sandra, it doesn't deal with rape as a war crime.
It has now identified rape as a war crime, which is a really good thing. So cases have been coming forward from Rwanda and I think also from the former Yugoslavia.
Although in Rwanda, a report reveals that men are more likely to admit to murder than to rape, because that is a social stigma in that culture?
Yes.
Well, wasn't there a women's commission that wrote a major report in 1994 in response to what had gone on in Yugoslavia and Rwanda?
Yes, the Women's Commission conducted assessments in 6 refugee settings and 2 internally displaced settings and documented the lack of reproductive health care of any kind for refugee and internally displaced women and girls. This is a seminal report, the findings of which were used to advocate at an important conference, the International Conference on Population and Development in 1994. So in 1995, for the first time, humanitarian agencies started to address reproductive health in these settings. And there have been major improvements over the last decade, but there are still some very serious gaps, particularly in the early days of and weeks of new emergencies, making sure that women have access to care, and also among internally displaced populations.
But are the aid organizations more conscious of the problem now than they were 11 years ago?
Certainly. There's definitely growing awareness and understanding of it, but more is needed in terms of ensuring that they're trained and have the adequate skills to provide the care necessary for survivors of sexual violence, for women who are suffering from complications of pregnancy and delivery.
Although I've heard that some of those programs are now in danger because funding has been slowed.
Yeah, the funding, the economic climate, and certainly the political climate have been obstacles and continue to be obstacles to overcome.
Gertrude, were you aware that these new ideas were being instituted around the world when you were working with these women? Does it filter down to the people who are actually on the ground?
The ideas of...
Well, the international, the Women's Commission's report, which talked about changing the way women's health is dealt with in areas of conflict.
Yes, we are aware. We are able to hear about them through our higher-ups. And just as she said, it's being recognized, and people are now trying to focus more attention, even though with the ideas and the awareness, funding still continue to be a problem to do more than what is being done.
There are reports that women who are in areas of internal are being internally displaced, like Uganda and Congo right now, are having worse conditions than refugees, because refugees still go to camps, the NGOs are out there, but the internally displaced women are just going from place to place trying to get away from the violence. Was that something that you experienced in Liberia?
Yes, it was something that we experienced, especially in the last year of the fighting. in people who were in camps, even people who were in camps became displaced so many times when the war reached at its peak. And there was not services, more services, and that real focus on the internally displaced women compared to refugees who were in camps. And even internally displaced women and internally displaced people as a whole, those who are in camps that are recognized are giving some assistance. There are a lot more who are in places where they are not recognized as refugee camps, and they don't have access to services.
Now that the political situation has been stabilized in Liberia, have you been able to return to the interior?
Yes, that's why I'm in Nima County now. I was working in Monrovia. We have returned to the interior. The International Rescue Committee is in Lofa and Nimba. And these two areas are strategic areas where the wars were really serious. The fightings were serious and they lasted for so long. And the conditions there are very bad with the citizens as a whole. Refugees that are there from Sierra Leone and Ivory Coast, and even displaced people that are there from other areas.
What happens when a young woman returns to her hometown, her village? She's been raped. She has a child. Are people ready to welcome her back?
It's a problem. That's why women who face problems like that, they are taking time to be able to return to their own villages, because the family, you'll be rejected by the family, you'll be rejected by the husband, and even the other children, you'll be rejected by them. But with the awareness that we are carrying on now to let people know that the women are not responsible for what happened to them. They didn't call for it, and they need support from the family, they need support from the community, and they need support from all of us in the community, because it's a problem for them. If we don't support them, they will continue to live with those feelings.
That requires re-education within the community. Sandra, are there any programs to re-educate people along these lines?
There's growing awareness and growing programs like the one in Liberia to educate communities about gender-based violence, its causes, that it can be prevented. We know that things can be done to prevent it, and prevent it specifically in these settings, and also that things can be done to address it and prevent further complications, which is really critical.
But right now, the prognosis doesn't look all that hopeful, does it?
Much more needs to be done.
Thank you both so much for participating in today's Underreported. I've been talking with Sandra Krause, Director of Reproductive Health Program at the Women's Commission for Refugee and Women and Children, and also Gertrude Garway, Program Manager for the International Rescue Committee's Gender-Based Violence Program in Liberia. She recently received a Voices of Courage Award for her work by the Women's Commission for Refugee, Women and Children, and congratulations for that, Gertrude. You deserved it, obviously.
Thank you.